warriors to our camp. How many of you are there?
I have around 300 under my command, I answered honestly. A strangely long pause followed. The regent whispered something else to the princess, but this time the girl objected.
But I already promised I'd invite all of Amra's warriors. I cannot go back on my word.
Very well, my princess, Uvari Dor Shu answered with a deep bow of respect. We'll bring enough boats to the fort to carry all our guests.
Land of the Giants. The last thing I saw on the shore of the River of Death was a blaze so bright it turned night into day, with huge tongues of flame lapping above the walls of the lower fort. No, we didn't torch it. It was as reliable a shelter for those traveling along the Styx as could be imagined. The huge hot fire was burning right on top of the respawn stone. My sister thought it would be a better trap than sharpened wooden stakes. Valeriana Quickfoot had reinforced the raging flames with ghastly spells from her death magic arsenal. Shaman Gu got in on the act as well, adding his magical contribution, and guaranteed me that the fire would kill anything alive and carry on burning until at least the middle of the next day. I was next to the princess in the boat, and Chinese Shu was enthusiastically telling me the story of her tribe. Constant border wars with neighboring clans, temporary alliances and breakdowns over issues that seemed minor, but were moments of principle to the Rougarou. For example, who got to sit to the right of the chieftain of a united army during a banquet, or the use of notched arrows in a hunting competition during the autumn rut. But with all their many-year, if not many-century, history of constant border conflicts between tribes, the Rougarou had certain rules for their warfare. For example, the conflict immediately ended if any member of a ruling family was taken prisoner, at which point the parties negotiated only about payout size. Also, an injured enemy was never killed, and none of their neighbors even thought of raising a hand against a child or pregnant female. These eternal conflicts kept the warriors in good shape, but didn't threaten the existence of the clans themselves. But everything changed when the Undying came.
It's like they simply have no understanding of honor, the princess lamented, raising her paws to the sky in a vain attempt to call vengeance on the low-down newcomers. For the Undying, there's no difference between a warrior and a helpless newborn. They kill everyone. They even killed our truce envoy, even though he came to their camp unarmed and with peace symbols on his body, in accordance with every rule. Why do they act this way?
In her naivete and faith in justice, Chinese Shu reminded me greatly of Taisha in the very first days of our acquaintance. The goblin girl had also sincerely not understood why players had attacked the NPC village of Tish, saying the peaceable goblins living there hadn't done anything wrong to them, so the Undying had no reason to attack. Now, I guessed that before me was another next-generation NPC, and to test that theory, I started talking about the world of the Undying. But Chinese Shu immediately dropped out of the conversation and let all my words go in one ear and out the other. All the same, as soon as I returned to in-game events, the princess latched back in with vigor. In the last year and a half, the clan of the White Lily had seen several harsh Undying attacks and three times had even been forced to move their main camp. The last attack had happened just 2 months earlier, when Undying traveling on boats up the Black River had discovered the Rougarou camp and cut down practically half of its inhabitants. Among those killed in the cruel carve-up were Chinese Shu's parents, after which power in the tribe had gone to the young princess. According to the Huntress, the Rougarou of the Clan of the White Lily had learned a painful lesson and hidden their new camp location well, so now it would only be possible to reach it by water, and only by those who knew the lie of the confusing waterways and swampy banks of the Black River.
This evening, our scouts saw some people at the fortress. What was more, my subjects recognized some of them. These people were among those who killed my parents and many other clanmates. So I ordered all warriors of the White Lily to prepare for battle, and together we swore to get revenge on the newcomers for that vile attack. But you got them first.
I couldn't tell if the princess was speaking with reproach or not, but in any case, I hurried to answer the furry girl.
Yes, we cut down the first small group, but that was just scouts before the main invasion. So said our prisoner. The main forces of the Undying are supposed to come to the fortress tonight, which was why we started that huge fire where they should be showing up. For some time, the devastating flame really will hold back the enemies, but it won't stop their inevitable invasion. The Undying will come no matter what, and there will be lots of them.
The Rougarou Huntress clearly wasn't taking me seriously enough, because she answered carelessly that the clan of the White Lily was not afraid of low-down Undying. The warriors of her clan were many and brave. They were prepared to die for their princess and would never retreat. I didn't try to convince her otherwise, seeing how we'd arrived at our destination. The boat touched the mucky bottom and gradually came to a stop. At that very moment, the princess gracefully hopped ashore and disappeared into wisps of white fog. Following the princess, all of her bodyguards also left the boat, even the oarsmen, taking the oars and leaving me all alone. I took a look around as much as I could in the dense fog. The gentle slope of the shore reeked of ooze and rotting river plants. The smell was so strong that it seemed palpable and stuck to my clothing. There was no wind, and there was such thick fog all around that I didn't even have a close appreciation of how the Rougarou could navigate here. Both my goblin vampire's night vision and search for life were worthless in the thick fog. By the way, it was quite strange that I couldn't detect any living creatures near me. After all, in theory, we were supposed to be arriving at a large village. At that very moment, my sister, as if sensing my alarmed state, sent me a private message.
Big Ears, these dog-headed helmsmen left me and the others on some uninhabitable riverbank, then took off with most of the boats and all the oars. It's dark here. There's dead swamp forest all around, and the place is totally wild and impassable. It doesn't seem like anyone lived here at all, ever. Where are you now?
I told Valeriana Quickfoot my coordinates, and almost immediately was answered that I was more than 4 kilometers away from the others.
How could that be?
The Rougarou must have purposely separated me and my warband, setting the orcs down in some desolate place and leaving them without means of transportation, leaving me here on this boggy shore. I wrote Valeriana to get the orcs into combat order and stay on her toes, start building a fortification with the help of our ogre fortifier if possible, and then be sure and try to start carving new oars for the boats.
Oh, I just got new quests from you. Don't worry, Amra, we'll do everything.
I was less and less happy with what was happening. The Grey Pack didn't show up next to me either. The wolves appeared by me only when they were very far away and had lost their master, but if the distance was not so great, they simply tried to reach me on foot. So now it might take them quite some time to reach me along the mucky swamps and many streams. It had turned out badly with the wolves, but what could I do? Rules are rules. But I was especially worried by the fact that, in the river next to me, I saw some bizarre movement. I heard strange gurgling and splashing sounds, as if a large lizard or crocodile was swimming in this foggy branch of the Styx. I tried to call Vixen so that, in case of danger, I could fly away on the winged snake, but my mount didn't answer for some reason. Something must have happened to the Royal Forest Wyvern. Meanwhile, the strange splashing was getting closer and closer. The unknown monster was approaching. And then, when I was just about to dash away from the water at full speed, the dark, tall figure of an oarsman came through the dank fog. It was unexpected, I'll be direct. An intelligent creature? I froze in place and prepared to either speak with this approaching stranger if he was peaceably inclined, or run or defend myself if not. All my attention was now concentrated on the mini-map. It was very important to see the marker color of the oarsman as fast as possible and figure out what I could do from there. A red marker meant aggressive, yellow indifferent, and green friendly. I mentally spun my options over in my mind for every possible scenario, but the color of the marker I finally did see was gold. A unique creature? Karen. Ferryman of the River of Death. Unique creature.
Karen! I'll admit, I was totally confused and didn't quite know what to do. Running away from a deity was obviously stupid, and hoping to match forces with such a powerful and most importantly immortal creature all the more so.
and the problem wasn't even that there was a black skull over the ghastly figure of the ferryman of dead souls. Back in school, when we went through the myths of antiquity, I had to make a report about, coincidentally, Karen. So I had some idea of who this being was. Grandson of the primordial deities Chaos and Caligo. Son of the black night goddess Nyx and the god of deep darkness, Erebus. Karen's brothers and sisters were just as fearsome as him, too. Thanatos, god of death. Hypnos, god of sleep. Nemesis, goddess of retribution. Lyssa, goddess of madness. Apate, goddess of deceit. And even the goddess of strife, Eris, who'd started the legendary Trojan War. The three fates were sisters of Karen as well. The only person who'd managed to overcome Karen in his many millennia, and still hadn't destroyed the ferryman of souls, just managed to take the haggard old man's pole, was the legendary Hercules. But I was far from the greatest hero of all times and peoples. His small boat stopped just two steps from me, and I managed to see the time-blackened boards of the boat, the long, strong pole, and the ancient man's bony fingers in perfect detail. Karen himself was tall and gaunt. His thin gray hair didn't even come close to covering his dark, liver-spotted scalp. He had chalk-white, unmoving eyes, more reminiscent of a blind man's, a wrinkled face, and blackened, uneven teeth. Karen's clothing was nothing but a foul sackcloth, decayed by time and with many gaping holes. And nevertheless, I didn't forget for a single second how powerful a creature had turned his attention to me and made a low, waist bow of respect to the ancient being. Nevertheless, I was certainly not expecting what happened next. Successful charisma check. Experience received, 210 experience. Successful check for unique creature reaction. Experience received, 1,700 experience. Successful check for Karen's reaction. Experience received, 28,000 experience.
Are you lost, boy? Need a ride?
The deity's voice was croaking and sickly, and at the end of his short introduction, the old man erupted into a coughing fit. Nevertheless, the fact that Karen had begun speaking with me was surprising all on its own. However, I was in no rush to agree to his offer, keeping in mind that, based on all the legends, Karen transported the souls of dead people to the kingdom of the dead, from whence they could never return. And that was like, not on my way.
Everything is so simple with the dead, the ferryman said, as if reading my thoughts. You take your payment, bring them to the same old place, and your work is done. With the living, it's also clear. I can bring them to the kingdom of the dead, if they ask nicely, but once there, they quickly become indistinguishable from the other inhabitants. But as for you, the undying, it's all much harder. What sense is there to bring you or your souls to the kingdom of the dead if you are just reborn in 1 hour anyway?
An unusual point of view. I'd somehow never thought before about how Karen might look on the players of a virtual game. Technically, I could try and ride his craft, or was it better to wait for Vixen?
Your flying snake got too distracted hunting for local game and became someone's lunch,
the immortal ferryman said, easily demonstrating his omniscience, a distinguishing feature of the gods.
She's still got 40 minutes until she's reborn, so if you don't want to wait that long, hop into my boat. I'll take you wherever you need to go.
Mission received. Crossing the Styx. Mission class. Rare. Personal. Description. Name a location and come to an agreement with Karen about payment for passage. Reward. 10,000 experience. Fame plus 3. Plus 50 to Karen's opinion of you. Plus 10 to the opinion of Karen's family. I was somewhat worried by the issue of payment. As far as I knew, in ancient Greece and Rome, a small coin was stuck under the tongue of the dead, especially for Karen. But how much could the old man want to transport a living person? Something was telling me that, in this case, payment wouldn't be measured in money. Hercules had paid for passage in pelts, while the greatest musician of antiquity, Orpheus, had played for him on the cithara. But what did I have to offer the deity? My gaze again hooked onto the time-blackened boat, which looked quite rickety, like it could sink at any moment. Maybe I could offer Charon a newer boat. As a matter of fact, I did have the one the Rougarou had brought me here in, while the ferryman already had his own pole to steer. However, as soon as I hinted about an exchange, the old man laughed uncontrollably.
That new thing will be history in 10 years. But my boat has served for millennia, and will continue to serve millennia from now.
Trading skill increased to level 27. My offer made Charon laugh, but his laughter gave way to yet another heavy hoarse cough. I took a risk, nevertheless, and jumped into the black boat. Where did I need to go? At first, I was planning to just join up with my friends, but now I had sharply changed my decision. The pitiful 4 kilometers separating me and my warriors was a distance I could overcome by simply waiting for Vixen to respawn, or at the very least by walking and swimming. It was totally irrational to squander divine intervention on such a modest goal. But what if... 320 kilometers above the rapids of the Styx, there's a place where a mythical hound can be found. Or perhaps a not fully grown hound, but simply a puppy, I said, remembering that Mariam standing right behind you, when completing a similar quest with Fimblethul, had spoken of a small puppy, which she then raised. Could you bring me there? And how long will it take?
Yes, I know of such a place.
Charon finally stopped coughing and was now stroking his disheveled gray beard in thought.
I'm not received too cordially up there. That place has its own gods, but I can take you. As for time, what does it matter how long the trip takes if all around is only fog and cold black water? There's nothing for the eye to even catch on.
The ancient old man started into another heavy coughing fit, and I extended him an elixir of cure disease. To my surprise, my gift was accepted with favor and immediately used as prescribed. Growing a bit braver, I offered the ferryman another vial of medicine, but Charon refused.
It isn't a problem for me to heal myself. I still have a bit of Olympian ambrosia, and beyond its intoxicating effect, it heals all illness.
With these words, Charon pulled out an opaque amphora, caked in dried mud, and gave it a slight shake. I heard a few droplets splash around the very bottom.
But there isn't much ambrosia left. I have to save it. When Zeus organizes another feast, and I can refill my stores.
If that wasn't a hint, I'd never played a computer game before. Instantly, I removed a barrel of beer from my inventory, which I had taken today in the lower fort. I wanted to also take out some appetizers. I also had corned beef and dried strips of meat, but my sensitive nose caught the smell of dried fish. Not yet believing it myself, I looked under the mat on the bow of Charon's boat. Underneath were fishing lines braided from horsehair, primitive goose-feather bobbers, and handmade wooden hooks.
Sometimes I go fishing when no one is around to see.
The old man seemingly grew slightly embarrassed and even started trying to justify himself.
What else is there to do on the River of Death when there's no work? Only fish. Yesterday I almost caught a catfish this big.
Charon spread his arms wide, demonstrating the size of his escaped prey.
Without a net, it was hard to get such a beaut into the boat, but I lost my net 6 centuries ago near the sandbanks of the Styx. 300 years later, I tried to find it. I even dived in the black water, but I quickly got grossed out and gave up.
In reply, I told Charon about the underwater city of Uka, and the professional fishermen from the ranks of the Undying, who spent days on end on the banks competing amongst themselves in the art of fishing. I also told him that I could order good tackle with delivery, and I just need to tell the magical courier where to bring it. The ferryman noticeably lit up, having seen a careful listener in me, and began telling me his fish stories with clear satisfaction, recalling the most curious cases and best fish of the past 1,000 years. I listened to his fish stories, cleaned a dried fish I found under the mat for the both of us, and poured some fine beer from the barrel into some wooden mugs I found on the boat. Mission completed. Crossing the Styx. Experience received. 2,300 experience. Fame increased. Present value, 18.
"So, do you keep up with your family at all?" I asked Karen,
and the old man choked on his beer in surprise. Coughing and wiping the foam from his beard, he asked what I knew about his relatives. It seemed to me that Karen wasn't too happy to discuss this. He was either embarrassed at his origins, or thought discussing his relatives would totally kill the trusting and careless atmosphere of our spontaneous feast. I readily told the immortal ferryman of souls everything I knew about his parents, brothers, and sisters. It seemed I managed to surprise the deity with my deep knowledge of his genealogy, and also with the fact that I didn't show any fear discussing the god of death, goddess of madness, and the others. Slightly slowing down, Karen admitted that he did keep up with them and even regularly met all his many family members, except the goddess of strife.
"Little Eris isn't gonna poke her nose into such a desolate wasteland just for me. My sister loves big, noisy groups and mass gatherings. Those things give her huge satisfaction. But every time she shows up, there are scandals, swearing, and immortal gods getting punched in the face. For mere mortals, that's thousands and thousands of lost lives. I haven't seen Eris since the Trojan War. Although..."
Karen dug into the bosom of his shirt, which looked like just a hole-ridden rag.
"I used to have a gong to summon her. Ah, here it is. If you want, take the gong. It's just been laying around in my stuff for thousands of years."
With these words, Karen handed me a time-darkened bronze plate with worn, unreadable words and barely distinguishable drawings of athletes or warriors, along with a small bronze hammer attached by a small chain. Gong of Summoning the Goddess of Strife, Eris. Indestructible item. Recharge time after use, 200 years.
What a dangerous thing.
With extreme caution, I took the plate and hammer from the slightly tipsy deity, trying to prevent any chance of their touching one another. I suspect that, if an unforeseen summoning had happened, Eris would have been unhappy with being forgotten for millennia, and would have found such sharp words for her brother that the deities would inevitably start fighting, which would lead to my just as inevitable respawn as an undesirable witness to their argument. As soon as I'd placed the bronze gong in my inventory, Karen told me we'd already arrived. To be honest, I hadn't even noticed any difference in the surrounding landscape. It was the very same night, black water and impenetrable fog. Also, we didn't seem to have gone up any rapids. All the same, I didn't doubt the deity's words. Karen had been traversing the River of Death on his boat for thousands of years, and, though unhurried and even paced on first glance, he had overcome a huge distance in remarkable time by lazily operating his pole.
"Right there. A high-powered river flows into the Styx called the Gjul," the ferryman said with an indistinct wave of his hand into the fog. "There you'll find the Gjallarbrú, the legendary golden bridge between the world of the living and the dead. The land of the giants and the queen of the dead lands, Hel, with her very unpleasant daddy Loki. Those are other gods, and they don't receive me and my kind cordially, so I won't go near the bank. But you can walk through the shallows here. I don't know, Emra, why you wanted to visit these unwelcoming lands, but we have come to them from the world of the dead, and the local inhabitants don't expect guests from over here."
I thanked Karen for the help and gave him a bow at the waist. After that, I jumped off the boat to a sandy spit extending far into the river. My boots gave a strange hissing sound, as if they were in acid, but I quickly got up on the sand. As soon as I'd come out of the water, the ancient ferryman dissolved in the fog like a ghost together with his black boat. And another second later, The gray pack appeared next to me in full, and I heard Vixen's wide wings flapping overhead. The game algorithms thought my animals were too far away, so they had sent them to their master. The wolves put their tails between their legs and started whining plaintively, feeling very uncertain in these borderlands of the world of the dead. Even the huge Baron had his ears pressed against his head and was crawling on half-bent paws, nuzzling up to his master, as if I could protect him from danger. I opened the map and tried to get my bearings, but other than a small, bright circle of river and a piece of shore around us, there were only undiscovered lands. I had to spend a long time zooming out before I could see the area of the sticks Antonius Just had shared with me. Upper Fort, Rapids, the land of the Cyclopes, a bunch of markers warning of danger. And that was where the Life-Giving Lights expedition had ground to a halt. Oh, how far I was from those places. Going by the map scale, it was 300 kilometers and maybe even further. I suspected that no players before me had ever before managed to come this far up the sticks. I closed the map and gave a heavy sigh. I couldn't afford to make any mistakes. One wrong move could lead to death in this ghastly, dangerous place, and I would not get another chance to be up here. After ordering my wolves and wyvern to simply wait and not do anything, I threw an old cloak with stealth bonuses over my shoulders and activated all kinds of protective effects. Undead apathy, night vision, search for life. I then went into stealth mode and carefully walked onto dry land. It was a wooden house. A normal house made of time-darkened beams, but it was of truly colossal dimensions. In comparison with this, even the blockhouse my sister and I had stayed in near the village of Tish, which was built by giant ogres, seemed like a mere dog kennel. This side of the huge building was apparently the backyard with storehouses, sheds, and other utility buildings. Other than a dozen ghastly-looking hounds, dozing in the interior courtyard braided into a ring, I couldn't see anyone. Guard dog. Level? ? I couldn't see the level of these terrifying mutts. Their markers were simply accompanied by black skulls, although, based on their titanic dimensions, I could suppose at least level 200, if not 3. But I wasn't particularly afraid of the dogs, supposing that I would be protected from their frightening teeth by my huge positive bonuses to the reaction of any canid. What was more, in case of alarm, I could try and lure up to 4 of the fanged guardians to my side, after which the other hounds would quickly stop caring about me. No, I didn't misspeak. It really was 4 and not 2, because I'd decided to get rid of the 2 swamp wolves. I had no attachment to them, and there were now somewhat stronger candidates. I kicked the 2 brown wolves out of the gray pack, supposing they would simply walk away. But no such luck. A blistering fight sprung up, and the gray pack on the shore of the river immediately sated their hunger with their former compatriots. Huh. That was a bit uncomfortable. Stealth skill increased to level 36. Seeing that system message run before my eyes, my big-eared Amra smiled in satisfaction from ear to ear. Yes, my stealth skill was rising quickly, which was one of the reasons I was in no hurry to crawl out in front. My goblin herbalist was hiding behind a bunch of stinking trash in the immediate vicinity of a dozen very dangerous, high-level opponents, but due to my cover, overpowering any smell I might have given off, the camouflage cloak and my bonuses to stealth, I remained unnoticed by the big-toothed guard dogs. The game algorithms considered this a spectacular success, and my stealth skill bar was filling up right before my eyes, giving me a new level almost every minute. But that wasn't the only reason I was taking my time. I had already reached the inner courtyard just 20 steps from the titanic cabin of the giants, but I still had yet to see my target. What was more, the game algorithms of Boundless Realm had yet to give me the 12 Yelivalgar Guardians quest, which is why I had come to these lands in the first place. I thought, and Karen had confirmed that somewhere in the land of the giants and gods of Scandinavian legend, there must be a unique mythical hound, a brother to my Fimblethul. But where was he? Stealth skill increased to level 37. Somewhere very far away, on the boggy shore further down the sticks, my friends were probably worried about me and didn't understand why I wasn't answering their messages. My brothers in arms could see that Amra was alive, but they couldn't tell where he was located. The squadron of NPC orcs was probably calling and searching for their missing commander. They might even rebel and refuse to obey the Mavka without me. Meanwhile, I was just lying on my stomach next to a pile of trash and couldn't do anything about it. It wasn't clear how long I could keep this up, but just then, a very subtle squeak rang out from the direction of the huge house. My huge green ears immediately perked up and tried to determine the source of the sound. It seemed the squeak was coming from under the porch. Yeah, that was right. One of the huge black dogs had woken up and gone to hide under the porch. It was a feeding female, based on her milk-filled pendant nipples. The mother's arrival was met with elated yelping. There must have been a couple of puppies under the porch. Based on the squeaking, it seemed there were three, no, actually four, puppies. Very slowly, I left the very comfortable and safe shelter and started peeking out to the side, trying to take a wide curve around the yard to catch a glimpse of what was happening under the stairs. Stealth skill increased to level 38. Finally, I managed to see the puppies and could barely contain a howl of joy. There it was. Among the puppies drinking their mother's milk, one was marked with a gold marker on the minimap. A unique creature. But the puppies were still just level zero and not yet independent creatures. I couldn't simply pick them from afar and include the blind little black pup into the gray pack. What should I do then? Naturally, I didn't have a few days to wait for the puppies to grow up. Also, it was easily possible that the puppy might remain in such a small, inactivated state for many weeks and even months, only turning on when one of the players who'd received the 12 Yelivalgar Guardians quest showed up. After all, it was supposed to before someone who had honestly overcome all the obstacles and traps, crossed the bridge between the worlds of the dead and the living, fought with the pack of malicious dogs and earned a reward in the form of a unique pet. But this player wouldn't be me, because the game system hadn't given me this unique quest. I wasn't sure how much longer I could have watched the puppies and mentally self-castigated, but my goblin accidentally met eyes with the feeding female. Check for guard dog reaction failed. After such a message, there was no more guessing if she'd noticed me or not. What was more, the marker of the feeding mother momentarily changed shade from neutral yellow to red. Aggression. I ran forward at full speed, tacking between the huge awakening beasts as I ran. Meanwhile, I just rudely jumped over or on top of several of their furry backs. Dodge skill increased to level 24. Dodge skill increased to level 25. Acrobatic skill increased to level 21. Animal control skill increased to level 44. Of the four enemies I tried to take under my command, I only managed to include one into the gray pack. But even that was a great success, because the animal increased in size instantly from the bonuses and distracted the other defenders. I then, barely managing to dodge the jaws gnashing at my very throat, crawled under the belly of my hound, which hopped to its feet, and found myself facing the female. She bared her teeth, protecting her young, and gave a deafening roar right in my face. Damage taken. 0 hit points. Spell, psionic strike. Immunity to fear. The female lunged her toothy maw in my direction, then tried to lie down and cover her pups with her huge body, but I was already jumping toward the valuable loot. Got it. I managed to grab the puppy with my hands. Mine! Ow! Even at my high strength and constitution, the huge guard dog pressing down with all her weight was too heavy. My bones and joints creaked. How painful. Damage taken. 310. Crushing. Armor ignored. Damage taken. 278. Crushing. Armor ignored. Damage taken. 390. Crushing. Armor ignored. I tried not to think about the fact that there were puppies in the very same situation. My life was flowing away quickly. In 10 more seconds, I'd be dead. I didn't have enough strength to lift the furry creature. Despite the pain and stress, I still had enough intelligence to change tactics and not try to escape from under the huge press. Carefully placing the black puppy in my inventory and making sure he was alive, I activated my vampire ability Incorporeity for the first time. How wonderful it felt to be free from that pressing weight. It was as if I had freed myself from the strangling embrace of a python. The huge, enraged mother gnashed her jaws impotently, but her terrifying teeth passed right through me, not doing any damage. Dodge skill increased to level 26. Dodge skill increased to level 27. Acrobatic skill increased to level 22. But, unfortunately, this invulnerability was very short in duration. I had just 30 seconds, or to be more accurate, 27. So I ran toward the river as fast as my feet would take me. The battle in the courtyard was still going on, although my hound had already collapsed to the ground and was being torn to shreds. Nevertheless, the main contingent of guard hounds was occupied, and just three were chasing me, including the female herself. I tried to get those three onto my side one more time, but again without result. The chasm dividing our levels was too wide, and the chance for success with hostile beings was quite small to begin with. In such a fleshless state, I could move very fast, and the guard hounds couldn't keep up. As I ran, I ordered Vixen to wake up, spread her wings, and be ready to fly. I was planning to use her to take off into the sky to evade pursuit, and as for the Grey Pack, I ordered them to run away as fast as possible, because if my wolves met with such deadly enemies as those bounding after me now, they didn't have a single chance to escape. My last few seconds of being immaterial were ticking away as I ran up to the banks of the Styx. My pursuers were 40 meters behind me, but barking desperately with every second, trying to hit the impudent, fleeing goblin with waves of fear. That didn't worry me much, due to my complete immunity to fear. But as for Vixen, as shameful as it was, the Royal Forest Wyvern couldn't hold out, and, sharply flapping her wide emerald wings, took off into the cloudy sky, leaving her master to be torn to shreds.
"Emra, over here!"
The familiar, rasping voice of Karen drew my attention when my incorporeal state had passed, and I already thought I had no more chances for rescue. I didn't think it over, and, without slowing down, made a running jump into the cold black waters of the River of Death. When I landed, I was up to my belt in the water, which was freezing, simply icy, but also burned like fire. Successful check for poison resistance. Experience received, 370 experience. Successful check for poison resistance. Experience received, 370 experience. Karen extended me his long pole and brought my big-eared goblin on his boat, even helping me climb over the side. The three guard dogs stopped at the water's edge as if riveted in place, not wanting to crawl into the dangerous river.
"Let's go before their masters notice what you've taken,"
the old man commented aloud, and sharply pushed his pole off the riverbed. A moment later, the land of the giants was gone, lost in the fog. But at that, something was telling me Karen's boat and that dangerous riverbank were now separated by a huge distance, and I no longer had to worry about pursuit.
"Thanks, Karen. You showed up just in the nick of time. Another couple seconds and those dogs would have torn me to shreds."
"Oh, it's nothing,"
the ancient man waved off my gratefulness.
"You're undying, so you'd just be reborn in a different place, no matter what. I just wanted to tease those foreign gods. Also, you're an interesting guy to talk to. Well, and we didn't finish the beer."
Karen chuckled, taking the small barrel in his hands and giving it a shake, making a noticeable sloshing sound.
"Just enough for the road. Emra, at least show me what you took from the giant Modgood."
"Modgood?
So that was who lived in that huge house?" I'd heard the name Modgood before. The giant lady was a guardian of the golden bridge between the worlds of the living and the dead, one of the servants of Hel, the goddess of the afterlife. I got it out of my inventory and showed Karen the tiny black puppy, blindly nuzzling my finger.
"Gayul.
Yelivalgar Guardian.
Level 0 mythical hound. Unique creature."
"Just that?"
Karen said, drawing out his words in disappointment, immediately losing interest in my trophy.
"You could have found some more interesting stuff in the home of the giantess Modgood. If you'd have just told me you were interested in unusual dogs, I'd have shown you the three-headed Cerberus from afar. Now that's a ghastly creature. Even the gods try not to tangle with Cerberus. But as for people..."
Karen went sharply silent and spit into the water. It seemed to me that the ferryman of souls wanted to tell me the story of Hercules and one of his 12 feats, the capture of Cerberus, but remembered that, on his way to the kingdom of the dead, the legendary hero had walloped Charon himself to get across the Styx. Anyway, his mood was spoiled. He drained the rest of the beer in the barrel in one swig and asked in a none-too-friendly voice where to let me out.
"Next to my orc squadron, if possible," I answered.
To that, the ferryman pushed off with his pole a few times on the bottom and pointed his hand at the dark shore that appeared from the fog with far-off gloomy fires.
"We're here. Oh, you need to intervene right away. Jump off, quick, before the Rougarous smash your orcs' faces in."
The Clan of the White Lily. The scene I arrived to was not pleasing. The Black River was crowded from an abundance of boats full of dog-headed warriors, many of which were bombarding the shore with slings and shortbows. On the shore, there was a battle underway. Orcs, covering themselves with wide shields in something like a turtle formation, were reflecting a forward group of Rougarou trying to land their boats. Charon let me out right in the midst of all the chaos near a barricade erected by the defenders. The ferryman himself had already dissolved in the thick fog.
"Who can explain what's going on here?" I shouted,
attracting attention from both sides of the conflict.
"Amra is back!"
An elated roar from hundreds of orcish throats rolled over the swampy land for many kilometers. Foreman skill increased to level 48. Warchief skill increased to level 6. Warchief skill increased to level 7. Warchief skill increased to level 8. Dodge skill increased to level 28. I just had to say one sentence, but look what it did. Different markers lit up over many of my warriors, showing bonuses from inspiration. The orcs made their traditional war cry, consisting exclusively of curse words, and walked forward in formation, cut the few Rougarou warriors who had made it onto the swampy banks into shredded cabbage. The other dog-headed warriors quickly decided not to make land and immediately led their boats away from shore. Some of the enemy archers trained their fire on me, but I quickly sought shelter behind the shields of my orcs.
"Where'd you disappear to? Why weren't you answering my messages?"
the forest nymph threw herself at me, appearing from invisibility.
"I'll tell you later. It's a whole story."
I waved off the untimely questions and gave an involuntary whistle of surprise when I saw Valeriana Quickfoot's level, 93. I was also surprised to see the red skull symbol over her head.
"Better you tell me where that flea-ridden princess went to after leaving me alone in the middle of the swamp." "If you're talking about Shiny Shu," the Mavka said,
immediately guessing who I had in mind.
"The Rougarou princess landed on that side of the island with her tribe's main army," my sister said,
waving her hand somewhere opposite the river.
"The Rougarous were nearing our camp with war cries, but were impressed by the strong fortifications made under the leadership of the ogre fortifier and refused to attack head-on, instead trying to land at our backs from the river."
I had formed a mental picture of the opposing army's position, but I still didn't understand the reason why the Rougarous, who had met us in such a friendly manner, had suddenly changed their minds and decided to sabotage us. It wasn't that I was worried about the outcome of the battle. Our position was strong, and my orcs were brimming with vim and vigor. But I still wanted to avoid unnecessary losses.
"I need to speak with that furry deceiver. I don't like being tricked."
I started off determinedly toward the fortification, but stopped short when I saw Max Sochnier. The Naiad traitor still had the criminal symbol shining over his head like a beacon, and along with that marker, I saw the red skull symbol as well. My French friend's character was now more than 20 levels higher than mine. Max Sochnier, Naiad, level 87 traitor.
Just 20? He was a whole 35 levels higher than me. How?
Next, I saw the ogre fortifier running toward me, and he was at level 90. That really perplexed me. What had happened here?
"Amra, the Undying managed to get through our barrier at the lower fort,"
the giant said with agitation in his voice.
"At first, it all happened just as you predicted. The players opened the portal to the lower fort and flooded through in one group. Their first wave was entirely laid out by the metal spikes and the magical fire. It was awesome.
I now have the achievement, killed 340 players. I leveled up 42 times in just over a minute.
Oh, yes, it was unforgettable.
The fishman laughed uncontrollably, rubbing his webbed hands together in satisfaction.
I leveled up 40 times in just a minute and a half, and for a long time after that, I couldn't get on my feet because I was overcome with ecstasy. It was much better than sex.
I looked attentively at my underaged sister, who had also leveled up at this advanced rate, gaining 35 levels. But Val didn't comment on how it felt, just blushed and looked away. The ogre, meanwhile, continued his story.
But our opponents quickly accounted for their error, and a half hour later, another, better-prepared group came through. We could see the huge flame go dark from here, and they got through. The dead also respawned and got through on their second attempt. We saw a few messages in the local chat and realized they would certainly be after us. But we, as bad luck would have it, are stranded on this swampy island and can't run for our lives. And now the Rougarou have us under siege, so we can't go anywhere.
What could I say? The situation really had come together unfavorably, so I needed to figure out the reason for the conflict with the Rougarou fast. But first, I needed to safeguard myself, hiding my location from the pursuers. I wanted to ask my friends if they'd all turned off message receipt from unknown players in their settings, so no one could find us by that very simple method, when I suddenly slapped my own forehead in vexation. Why should our pursuers be clever and triangulate our position, or use other search methods, when we still had their captive in our camp? He should have come to his senses long ago, and now, despite the black blindfold over his eyes, he could simply tell them his coordinates in real time. We needed to kill the captive right away. Although, I got a better idea, and called Vixen over. The huge royal forest wyvern tried to snuggle up to me and ingratiate herself, but I pushed her toothy maw away in distress.
You haven't earned it. How could you have abandoned me to be torn apart by the guard dogs? Well, you want to make peace? Then look for the Rougarou village from the air. Yes, I know it's night and thick fog, but still, try. If you can find it, consider yourself forgiven.
Animal control skill increased to level 45. The huge winged snake flapped her wide wings noisily and disappeared in the wisps of dark cloud. I then turned to Max Sochnier.
Is your Olilissa here? Great. Ask her to overturn all these Rougarou boats. She might even eat a couple of the dog heads as a warning, so the others will think thrice before either swimming or taking their boats across the river. If she can, have her push the boats to us on shore. We'll need them later. Then send her to the lower fort to swamp the players' boats, if they decide to come after us. Those boats not only can, but must be broken and sunk so they cannot be repaired afterward. By the way, also send your swordfish to smash the players' boats.
Foreman skill increased to level 49. How could that be? That message made me think. I had just given a mission to a living player, not an NPC. How could my foreman skill have increased? Or were the Boundless Realm logical algorithms taking into account that I was sending messages through him to his Nereid girl? In any case, I wasn't going to bust my brains over it for long, because I had another very small but urgent matter. I called the she-wolf Blanca over and, at the same time, asked Valeriana Quickfoot to come over as an experienced beastmaster.
Val, you need to make sure this fluffy little miracle gets fed.
With these words, I extended the tiny mythical hound Gayul to my sister.
Aw, so cute!
The forest nymph exclaimed, immediately picking up the blind helpless and turning it belly up.
It's a girl!
Leave her to me. You'll only get in the way. By the way, now I understand why all the life-giving light guys were getting so mad in the local chat. They kept saying they'd failed a unique quest. They started a fight amongst themselves, and they still haven't figured out whose fault it is.
I walked away. The Mavka then called the goblin girl Yuna, now a level 40 wolf rider, over to help. Together they made a little bed for the wolf pup out of rags and straw. I remembered how harshly Blanca had treated her unneeded puppies and was slightly worried for the unique pet, which had been so hard for me to acquire. What was more, I was not sure the NPC she-wolf still had milk. But all my worrying was for nothing. Blanca understood her role instantly. The she-wolf still had milk, and the puppy started suckling on her new mother's teat without hesitation. It was an idyllic scene, but I needed to deal with other urgent matters. Valeriana Quickfoot was also needed elsewhere.
"Yuna, you'll answer for Guillaume with your head,"
I said strictly, and my NPC niece confirmed that she understood perfectly and wouldn't be going even a step away from her. The Mavka and I then hurried to the barricade surrounding the camp. This time, the orcs had enough logs and branches from the dead swampy forest to build an adequately tall and sturdy fortification, not like that pitiful parody we constructed for the army of the Rat King. From atop its 3-meter height, I could see many bright figures through the constant fog with my night vision. There were more than 100 of them. The Rougarou on this side of the island were not particularly active, but had begun sieging our fort. My interest was immediately piqued by a marker in the distance. It was many times larger than the others. Some kind of mount?
"The Rougarou brought one cyclops with them,"
my sister explained when I asked the question aloud.
"It still hasn't been brought anywhere near our fortification, but I can see its marker and label on the map. Level 138 cyclops."
"Just what I needed."
"All right, we'll handle the cyclops later. Now, enhance my voice with magic. I want to talk with Chinese Shu."
Valeriana Quickfoot said a sentence in an unfamiliar language and made a few passes of her hands, after which she told me that my wish was granted, and the volume of Amra's voice would be like the horn of an ocean liner for the next few minutes.
"Check, check."
My voice now really was loud enough to drown out thunder.
"This is Amra, commander of the Orcish warriors. I'd like to speak with Princess Chinese Shu."
No answer followed, even though I kept it up for a few minutes. Finally, my patience gave out.
"Rougarous, where is your Chinese Shu? That flea-ridden bitch doesn't know the meaning of the word honor or understand the laws of hospitality. I don't know what misunderstanding led to this mindless female becoming princess of the proud clan of the White Lily, but I do know one thing. In the whole rest of the world, attacking guests is considered a horrible shame. And now I just want to talk with Chinese Shu and find out why she did such a despicable thing. I want to speak on good terms, one-on-one, without weapons, meeting in the no-man's land between our armies. Rougarou of the clan of the White Lily, I promise that after this conversation, your princess will be returned to you alive and unharmed. But if Chinese Shu doesn't have the bravery to come out, look me in the eyes and explain herself, I swear that I will find her and treat her the way out-of-control bitches deserve. I'll give her a collar, put it on a chain, and make her guard my house."
My hateful and intentionally offensive speech was then interrupted by an outraged and insulted voice from the Rougarou warband.
"Enough shaming me! I'm not flea-ridden!"
Trading skill increased to level 28. Warchief skill increased to level 9. "Would you like to take the secondary skill Minstrel, CHP? Would you like to take the secondary skill Diplomat, CHP? Would you like to take the secondary skill Lothario, CHP?" Despite the serious nature of the moment, I couldn't help but laugh. I mean, come on. What the hell did I need Minstrel for? After hearing a serenade like that, any girl would pour the contents of a chamber pot on the head of such a hacky troubadour. Lothario also is hardly appropriate to the situation and my whole style of gaming. But as for Diplomat, I unexpectedly found myself thinking it over. The game system had suggested such a choice to me before, and I had conducted some complicated negotiations with the dwarves, the emissary of the Dark Sovereign, and these very orc pirates on our first meeting. With time, I suspected, negotiations would become a totally normal affair. Sure, the diplomat skill was not so great for me as a primary, because the goblin race didn't have a bonus to charisma, and had a 50% penalty to intelligence, but after all, I was planning to put the skill in my secondaries, so it didn't make a difference. So it was decided. I put that skill in my last free slot. Meanwhile, two figures emerged from the enemy army and started off unhurriedly in our direction. Strange that there were two negotiators. After all, I had clearly said we should talk one-on-one. But I didn't make a fuss over such small matters. The Rougarou princess had agreed to negotiate, and that was what mattered. All right, seeing as there were two of them, I'd also make slight adjustments to my plans and jump on Baron. The level 111 Swamp Wolf Alpha should emphasize my power and significance. Yes, it would have been better to take the extremely high-level guard dog instead, but it still hadn't respawned. As soon as I made a move forward, the Boundless Realm algorithms established a mission for the negotiations. Mission received. Negotiations with the Rougarou. 1 of 2. Mission class. Unusual. Racial. Time limited. Description. Figure out what made the Rougarou hostile and convince them to cease aggression within a half hour. Reward. 16,000 experience. Plus 15 to the opinion of the Clan of the White Lily. Plus 5 to the opinion of all other clans. Penalty for failure. Hostility with the Rougarou. Just a half an hour? That time limit was incomprehensible to me. In all other ways, the mission looked totally logical and was perfectly in line with my plan, to find out the reason the dog-headed men were angry with me and force them to retreat by any means necessary. We met halfway between our armies. The second negotiator from the Rougarou side was the regent Uvari Dor Shu, a level 124 druid. What could I say, as the princess was too young to make her own decisions? The presence of an advisor was totally explicable and even necessary. I didn't object to that one bit.
"For a start, I demand an apology for your insulting words," the princess declared proudly,
looking to her advisor for approval at the end of her sentence, and the druid gave a nod.
"You demand?"
I replied in an intentionally offended voice.
"Well, big-eared girl, you aren't in a position to demand anything. The losing side can only request mercy and ask for the terms of their capitulation."
"I must have missed something. Did we lose?" The regent cut into the conversation with an acrid smile of his fanged snout.
"Yes, advisor, you have lost, although you may not know it yet. Your fleet attacking from the river has been eradicated. All their means of aquatic transportation have been destroyed, and it would be no trouble at all for me to do the very same with all the rest of your boats. So I'd say you don't have such a great choice. You could stay here on this swampy muck island forever and build a new camp for your clan of the White Lily, seeing how going into the water means instant death for your warriors. Or you could try to attack my camp. But I have to warn you, trying to assault my fortifications will mean all your Rougarou warriors will die, and even the Cyclops will not help."
Diplomat skill increased to level 2. Diplomat skill increased to level 3. I saw my words make an impact of some kind, and the Rougarou began to think, but for now, both the negotiators had clearly underestimated the difficulty of their position. Perhaps if Amra had been higher in level, they'd have paid my words more mind, but the Rougarous saw a weak and inoffensive goblin herbalist before them, so they didn't take me seriously.
"Amra, even if you aren't lying about the boats being sunk, my warriors are still many in number, and each of them is stronger than any of your orcs. I will give the order to attack, and soon you won't have a single living warrior left."
I smiled, showing my sharp, predatory teeth.
"Princess, you're still too small and naive, so you can see only raw force and underestimate the power of magic. Your warriors will fight amongst themselves and tear each other's throats out, while me and my warriors simply watch the whole performance from afar."
As a demonstration, I opened the Greypack control interface, clicked on the list of available creatures, and selected a level 84 Rougarou huntress named Chinee Shu. Successful check for Rougarou reaction. Experience received, 800 experience. Successful charisma check. Experience received, 1,600 experience. Successful check for animal control skill. Experience received, 3,200 experience. Animal control skill increased to level 46. I succeeded at including the Rougarou princess in the Grey Pack. I didn't risk carrying out the same experiment with the regent. He was of a noticeably higher level than the princess, and his druid profession meant high intelligence, so he would be good at resisting magic. If I attempted to control him and failed, the whole effect would come to naught. Anyhow, as a demonstration of my abilities, the princess was enough all on her own. Jumping off Baron, I unhurriedly walked over to the girl, who was frozen and clearly afraid, not knowing what was going on. I started giving Chinee Shu commands like a trained dog.
"Sit.
Wag your tail. What a good girl. And now hold your arms against your body and stick out your tongue. Good girl. Here's a piece of meat for being so good. And now scratch your ear with your left leg. See, you've clearly got lots of experience. And you said you didn't have fleas.